There were times, too, deep at dawn, while others were still in their beds, when, showing himself to no one at all, he would go out beyond the wall and spend the whole day in the wilderness, turning aside whenever anyone was likely to meet him, and worn away and consumed in soul by the ever-present memories of his misdeeds. The wretched man would go back in only at dead of night, praying, because of his measureless and endless anguish, that evening might become morning. Then, shuddering at the darkness and at the monstrous visions that came whenever he chanced to fall asleep, he would pray that morning become evening again. For the gloom that enveloped him stood opposed to everything bright. A few months later, he bought a small plot of land, and on it, he spent much of his time in isolation, groaning and weeping over his own fate. It is said that once, around the middle of the night, becoming possessed like the Corybantic revelers, he went out from his farmhouse, lifted his gaze to the sky and the stars, truly seeing the order within the order of the universe, and cried out, "King of gods and men, you have not, after all, been neglectful of the nation of the Jews, nor is their claim of your providence a false one. Rather, those who say they have no champion or defender in you are utterly mistaken in their judgment. I myself am clear proof of this, for whatever I contrived against the Jews, I myself have suffered. I looked on while their properties were being plundered, granting the plunderers free license. For this, I was stripped of my paternal and maternal inheritance, and of whatever I had received as gifts and favors, and whatever else I had acquired by other means. I once reproached them with dishonor and foreign status, though they were citizens with full civic rights, so as to gratify their adversaries. A disorderly, unruly mob by whose flattery I, unlucky man, was deceived. For this I have been dishonored, and, driven as an exile from the whole inhabited world, I am now shut up here. I once brought some of them into the theater and ordered them, unjustly, to be tortured before the eyes of their bitterest enemies. And so it is only just that I have not been paraded into one theater or one city to suffer the utmost outrages, my wretched soul tormented even before my body. No, I have been paraded in a procession through the whole of Italy as far as Brundisium, through the whole Peloponnese as far as Corinth, and through Attica and the islands as far as Andros, my prison. And I am firmly persuaded that this is not the limit of my misfortunes, but that others lie in wait to make full payment in kind for what I have done. I killed some, and did not pursue those who killed others. Some were stoned, some were burned alive, others were dragged through the middle of the marketplace until their entire bodies were consumed. Of these deeds I know that the avenging furies await me, and the spirits of vengeance already stand as if at the starting line, poised and thirsting for blood. And each day, or rather each hour, I die in anticipation many deaths, in place of the one final death. Often he was terrified and thrown into panic. A shudder shook his limbs and every part of his body, and fear left his soul trembling, shaken by gasping breath and violent palpitation, since he was deprived of the one thing that by nature can console a human life, good hope. No favorable bird ever appeared to him. Every omen was ill-boding, every rumor turned back on him, his waking hours were full of toil, his sleep full of dread, his isolation like that of a wild beast. Yet was the company of a crowd the sweetest thing to him? No, his time spent in the city was most unpleasant. Was solitude in the country a safe refuge from disgrace? No, it was treacherous and merciless. Whoever approached him quietly, even gently, was under suspicion. "Someone is plotting something against me," he would say. "Whoever walks a little faster does not seem to be hurrying toward something else, but is pursuing me. The pleasant man lies in wait for me, the outspoken man despises me, food and drink are given to me as to cattle led to slaughter. How long, though I am made of iron, can I hold out against such great misfortunes? I know I am growing soft toward death, kept by the spite of some hostile power from cutting short my wretched life all at once, because of certain extremities of irreparable evils which, storing them up against me, it grants as a favor to those it has already treacherously murdered." Turning such thoughts over and writhing in anguish, he awaited in dread the end appointed by fate, and his continual pains stirred up and overturned his soul. But Gaius, being savage by nature and insatiable in his acts of vengeance, did not, as some do, let go of those he had once punished, but nursing an unending wrath, kept contriving some new disaster for them. and he hated Flaccus above all others, so that even men who merely shared his name he regarded with suspicion, alienated by the very sound of it. And often remorse came over him, because he had condemned Flaccus to exile and not to death. And though he respected the man who had pleaded for him, he nevertheless blamed Lepidus for it, so that Lepidus gave up interceding, from fear of punishment to himself. For he was afraid, reasonably enough, that by becoming responsible for another man's lighter sentence, he might himself incur a heavier one. Since then, no one any longer dared say anything in his defense. Gaius indulged an implacable and unchecked rage, which, instead of fading with time as it should have, grew sharper instead, like diseases in the body that relapse, for these are more severe than the first attack. They say, then, that once, lying awake at night, he fell to thinking about the men of rank who had been exiled, men suspected in name only of being unfortunate, but who had in truth secured for themselves a life free of business, at peace, and truly free. He even changed the name for it, calling it a sojourn abroad rather than exile. For a sojourn abroad, he said, was simply the removal of men who had abundant provisions and could live free of business, in tranquility and ease, and it was absurd for such men to enjoy the fruits of a philosophically life in the midst of peace. Then he ordered that the most eminent of them, those held in greatest regard, be put to death. He issued a written list of names, at the head of which stood Flaccus. When the men charged to carry out the killings arrived at Andros, Flaccus happened to be coming in from the countryside toward the town, while they were approaching from the harbor, and from a distance, each party caught sight of the other. Sensing from this what they were hurrying to do, for every soul is highly prophetic, especially in times of misfortune, he turned off the road and fled at a run over rough ground, forgetting, perhaps, that this was an island and not the mainland, where what good is speed when the sea shuts you in on every side? Of necessity, one of two things must happen. Either, pressing further on, to be carried into the sea, or to be caught the moment he reached its very edge. It was, then, comparing one evil with another, better to die on land than at sea, since nature has assigned the earth as the place most proper to human beings and to all land-dwelling creatures alike, not only while they live but also when they die, so that the same earth may receive both their first birth and the final dissolution of their life. But his pursuers, running without pause, caught up with him, and some at once began digging a pit, while others dragged him by force as he resisted, shouting and struggling. And because of this, his whole body was wounded all over, as he ran about exposed to their blows like a hunted animal. For as he grappled with and clung to his killers, at one moment preventing them from bringing their swords to bear, and at another receiving slanting blows, he became responsible for graver injuries to himself. And cut through and hacked apart in hands, feet, head, chest, and ribs, so that he was butchered like a sacrificial victim, he lay there. Since justice willed to inflict on a single body a number of deaths equal to the murders of the Jews who had been unlawfully put to death, and the whole place ran with blood from the many veins that were severed piece by piece, pouring out in streams. And as the corpse was dragged into the pit that had been dug, most of its parts came apart, since the sinews that bound together the whole unity of the body had been torn through. Such were the sufferings that Flaccus too endured, the truest proof that the nation of the Jews had not been deprived of help from God.